As everybody knows, human rights and the promotion of democracy has once again been placed central in U.S. foreign policy in lots of different ways, but some of the programs and initiatives that I oversee are some of the institutional ways we do it. But of course, our entire policymaking apparatus has now taken a much more aggressive and formal approach towards human rights and the promotion of democratic values. And obviously, it comes in many forms. We have a human rights report that comes out every year. We have a trafficking in persons report that I believe was just released yesterday. We have all sorts of reports on democratization, Middle East, North Africa, and across the globe, which is our way of not just assessing countries, but also providing a means of communicating about allegations, human rights abuses, and I guess our idealism when we approach it. But to kind of focus in, when we tend to look at three central elements when the U.S. government looks at human rights in any country, and the top one tends to be free and fair electoral processes. The second tends to be representative, accountable, transparent democratic institutions, including independent judiciaries under the rule of law. And then the third area that we tend to look at is the non-governmental sector. So are there independent civil society organizations, political parties, free media, and are these organizations allowed to be funded? So these three areas that tend to be electoral processes, governing institutions, and then the non-governmental sector are really the three areas that we look at when we approach any country and say, how are they doing on human rights? Let me then say from that kind of principled position and take a quick snapshot of the region of the Maghreb, because I think it is instructive. We can't necessarily look at Morocco divorced from what else is happening in the region and what other governments have decided to do in the region on this issue. And let me start with probably the most difficult one, which is Libya. In every publication, they come dead last in the region for human rights, for protecting human rights, for democratic institutions. There are no processes in place for addressing human rights concerns. There are no electoral institutions. There are no independent, transparent, democratic governing institutions to speak of. In fact, even the General People's Congresses were just dissolved, and that was kind of the quasi-parliamentary representative institutions that were at the core of the Green Book and the core of Colonel Gaddafi's philosophy of a people's democracy. So even those institutions have now been dissolved, and we don't yet know what will replace them. So looking at Libya is on one end of the spectrum on human rights and democratic rights in the Maghreb. Next step is Tunisia, in which it is slightly better. We do have some institutions, both a parliament, an elected president, and some governing institutions. Their electoral processes have serious flaws. Their governing institutions have serious flaws. And the non-governmental sector remains something that needs a great deal of work. But they at least have some of the institutional framework for addressing human rights and democratic reform issues. And then next would probably come Algeria. And again, I'm drawing a lot of this from Freedom House's work, our own reports that rank these. But Algeria, they actually have had better progress in some areas, but still need some significant work on all of those three areas. The non-governmental sector is a bit better than Tunisia. There's a bit more freedom. Governing institutions are probably a bit more transparent. They do have electoral processes that, again, have some flaws, but may be heading in the right direction. So where is Morocco? And let me start off by saying that over the last 12 months, we actually have seen some good progress in Morocco. And let me just kind of run through a few of these, I'll do it quickly, Rob, I promise. The revision of the national code to include citizenship rights for women as well as men was a very good adjustment in the code to ensure that women were having the same rights as men in Morocco in that key area. Something that is somewhat symbolic but important, for the first time the government of Morocco collected and published statistics on domestic violence. And again, symbolic but important. Any government that is willing to take a hard look at some of the flaws within their country and in their society, expose it to their citizenry and to the broader world, I think deserve a great deal of credit, because of course you can't address problems until you know what they are. So it was a move of confidence, I think, by the government of Morocco to take this step. Obviously the parliamentary elections, as Ahmed mentioned, by all observers said that they met international standards. And again, another step forward in establishing transparent, accountable, democratic institutions. But let me talk about the one area that I think is actually the most important, both regionally and for Morocco specifically, and that's freedom of association. This is something that the U.S. probably until about 5 or 6 years ago didn't spend a great deal of time working on in the Middle East and North Africa. As the President and Secretary have said, you know, frequently over the last 7 years, that we tended to ignore much of what was happening outside the governmental sector in the Middle East and North Africa, didn't spend enough time working to develop non-governmental relationships, non-governmental institutions, didn't do enough to pressure governments on freedom of association. And I think Morocco does stand as a good example of how, again, a confident government and a confident monarch can step forward and allow the organizations, non-governmental civil society organizations, to develop, to be funded, both internationally and domestically, and have freedom to pursue the agendas that they have set for themselves. Part of this that, again, we note, and I think said publicly, Sean McCormick after the elections, was the fact that the government of Morocco allowed both international and independent domestic observers for those parliamentary elections. And again, the reason it's so important for us is because virtually every country in the region, writ large, and all of the Middle East and North Africa say, no, you have to stop there. This is about our sovereignty. How dare you have international observers come and somehow give judgment to our process? And this is what we're always approaching with most of the governments of the region, is this very defensive perspective on international observers. And we worked closely with the Moroccan government, with NDI, and with Ahmed's CCDH to ensure that this could happen. And it ended up being a very productive exercise. Again, the confidence of the government of Morocco to say, we will allow independent observers to come in and rank us and tell us how we did relative to international standards is another very good sign. And again, I think shows that the freedom of association is alive and well. That's the one piece of Morocco that I wish we could transform throughout the region, because we need it elsewhere desperately. So those are the big positives. Now let me go on the side that there are a few challenges still, obviously, that Morocco and frankly every other country in the region and globally face. Institutionally, the parliament still remains, even though they had decent elections, it still remains a relatively weak institution. There are lots of reasons for that. I know from what we've heard from the king and the government, they would like it to be stronger. They would like to have stronger political parties. But currently, as you look at it, it's very limited power within the system of Morocco. Also, voter turnout in the elections was relatively low, which again, when you lack political participation, there's some question about how representative these institutions actually are. So that is another area of concern. The monarchy remains the seat of all of the significant executive powers. The authority that rests in the monarchy, at some point, some of the authorities will have to be ceded to other of the constitutional institutions, including the parliament, including the judiciary, and that is probably going to be a longer process. But right now, the executive, the monarch, still controls almost all of the executive powers. Moroccans are still denied the right to change the constitutional provisions related to their form of government. And the rules related to Islam. So there's still some, again, if you put it on the ideal of a citizenry should have a right to change its form of government through peaceful means, that right is still not allowed in Morocco. freedom of speech is still somewhat limited. Again, there are red lines in Morocco that, when crossed, there can be consequences for those who cross those lines. There remain some challenges in the freedom of the press, in which there are jail sentences and excessive fines for journalists. Again, this is something that we have talked with the government of Morocco about a great deal. They understand how serious this is, and there is a draft law that is now in the works that we hope will address some of these concerns. The judiciary, as I mentioned, is still not fully independent, and again, that is something that is, these are not things that can be simply solved. Even if the king says, I would like this done, it's institutional development, but again, an area of work. And then finally, trafficking in persons and child labor is still somewhat of a problem, but again, the government is addressing those challenges aggressively. So there are, of course, many positive things to say. There are still many areas of challenge. But let me talk a little bit about what the U.S. government is trying to do with our partner. Obviously, Morocco's a very strong ally on any number of fronts. And we're committed to partnering with the Moroccan people and their government to address all of these challenges and help encourage the positive development that's taking place. Our strategy is one based on really a few, four main tools that we use to work with the Moroccan government and the Moroccan people on promoting human rights and democracy. That's advocacy. We really want to support our own advocacy with the government and with the people of Morocco in terms of keeping our ideals high and trying to work with institutions and building institutions. Secondly, it would be assistance. We provide assistance to a lot of organizations in Morocco and international organizations such as NDI to work on some of these fundamental human rights and democratic rights issues. We have a lot of training programs, both governmental training programs and programs that non-governmental organizations use. And finally, we do public outreach. So we try very aggressively with our embassy and with our folks back here to do a lot of public outreach to not only push these ideas, but do whatever we can to provide resources, information, ideas on how Morocco can move forward. And the U.S. will remain committed to these principles. One of the wonderful things that occurred to me as I was preparing for this is I can't think, and again, I'm not that old, but I can't think of two presidential candidates who more intimately, profoundly understand the issue of human rights than Barack Obama and John McCain. I mean, these are two people from very different backgrounds, very different experiences, but both from their experiences in life understand, I would think, except maybe Franklin Roosevelt and a few other presidents in the past, have this profound understanding of human rights because of their own experiences. So we know that this commitment to human rights, to the promotion of democratic rights, will continue in the next administration. At least we hope so, but we're pretty confident. Let me just conclude by saying, you know, one of the areas that we've been thinking a lot about with some of our Moroccan friends, mainly in the context of the broader Middle East North Africa initiative, but something that we think would be a value not only for Morocco but for the region, and that is to have an Arab charter on human rights or an Arab democracy charter. Morocco is the natural country to lead an effort to establish a charter that would essentially set some standards and make some commitments for others in the region. And Morocco has been working with us on one of the planks of this charter on the freedom of association and on civil society development. But it is something that we very much would like to see develop. We probably won't be able to complete it in the next 7 months of this administration, but it is something that would be important for helping to institutionalize and bring to the surface these issues in a way across the region, but also for Morocco to take its natural leadership role on advancing human rights and democracy. So thank you.